This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. State and federal government are losing close to $500 million a year in tax revenue. According to an investigative report in the News and Observer, the culprits are construction companies that misclassify employees as independent contractors. The practice has put some construction workers in a vulnerable position as well. They are left without benefits like workers' comp and unemployment pay. The lead reporter on the series is News and Observer reporter Mandy Locke. She joins us in our studio now. Welcome back, Mandy. Good to have you here.
Great to be here, Frank.
Also with us from Washington, D.C., from McClatchy Newspapers, is the McClatchy Newspapers immigration and labor reporter Franco Ordonez. Franco, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Mandy, talk to us about this. What are these companies doing? What is it that when we say misclassifying workers, what are they doing?
Yeah, misclassifying is a really clunky word for a pretty simple practice, which is when a company decides instead of treating their workers as employees, as federal law prescribes, they treat them as independent contractors. And it seems like a really simple decision, but it has tremendous consequences for both the worker and the company. The company that does this can shave 20% or more from his labor cost, putting him at a competitive advantage to other companies. And for the worker, it means that he might be working in a really dangerous field without workers' comp insurance or unemployment benefits, and he would be paying the employer's share of payroll taxes.
But as you suggested, there are federal rules that govern whether you're a contractor or an employee. How do you get to decide yourself?
It is not left to a company to decide how they want to treat their workforce, irregardless of federal laws. Companies have to know employment laws, labor laws, IRS codes when they're determining how their workforce needs to be organized.
So how did you get wind of this story in the first place?
Well, as you probably know, Frank, I started on this path multiple years ago. Back in 2012, I started writing about problems of workers' comp insurance in our state. And that led me into the construction industry, where I started hearing about this practice of companies treating their workers as independent contractors. But at the end of 2012, I was left with a really big question. How much is this happening? Who's doing it? And at what cost? So that launched me into the next path, which was to find federal payroll records that must be submitted for federally funded projects, private companies taking part in building bridges and low-income housing have to submit payroll records every single week that they're on the job to prove to the government that they're paying a wage that the Department of Labor has established for every job type in every particular region. So it's through those payroll records that we were able to see how much this practice is happening in our state.
And what did you find?
This practice is rampant, even in federal projects, even when the federal government is requiring these companies to submit payroll records. Company owners were filling out these payroll reports listing low-wage hourly workers and no tax withholdings. They would simply write in 1099 or employee pay zone taxes, or they would leave it blank. And it was clear as day on these forms that were being submitted to the government.
Why is that clear? How easy is it for somebody who's supposed to be supervising this, like again, the federal government, do they have to take your word for it, or is there something that would show up right away that would tell you this can't be a contract employee?
So these payroll records list every employee. They list the job type. They list the hours they work, the rate of pay. And then there are about five blanks on the right side of the paper where, for an employee, you would expect to see tax withholdings. You would see state income tax, federal income tax. You would see Social Security and Medicare tax. And when that's blank, the company has decided to treat that worker as an independent contractor.
All right. And but would that show up if I'm supervising this contract, if I'm at HUD or somebody who's let these bids go? Would it be obvious to me that this can't possibly be a contractor? Is there something about their wages or something about the condition that would be a red flag to me?
The red flag is that form. It's the lack of withholdings that tell you that that company has decided to treat their workforce as independent contractors rather than employees.
So you started out here looking into unemployment compensation. It comes to misclassification. You expand. And then at a certain point, you realize if it's not just happening here, it must be happening all over the country.
That's right. Our parent company, McClatchy, embraced this project about a year ago, and that's when Franco joined me. He's up in D.C. and knows so much about immigration and labor issues. And then we had colleagues at other papers, Miami Herald, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, that started replicating our work, gathering payroll records to see how much, how extensively this was happening in their states as well. So the project that we're releasing today online is a culmination of more than 30 people working across the country.
Franco Ordonez, what was your piece of the puzzle? What did you look into?
Well, one of the main things that I looked into was trying to kind of find out what Washington's role was in this, and you know, what things did they miss? I mean, as we know, Washington doesn't always work the way that we wish it does, and a big reason was because found out that, you know, there was no one really tasked to make sure that the federal agencies were actually ensuring that these companies were not skirting these labor laws and treating employers as contractors.
So if you have nobody in HUD overseeing this particular part of the contract, then it becomes just an IRS problem. You go catch them.
Exactly. And that's kind of an issue. Everyone seems to blame the other side. None of the federal agencies want to talk about this or talk to each other about this. I thought one of the former DOL administrators that we talked to put it really well. He called it the stovepipe mentality. Each of these agencies has their own fiefdom. They concentrate on their own thing, and they really don't worry about what other agencies are doing. They have their own problems, and that's where this really gets lost.
How widespread is it in terms of a percentage of businesses or contractors, general contractors that are engaged in this kind of activity, Mandy?
Here in North Carolina, we found that more than a third of the workers on these payroll reports were treated as independent contractors. 45% of the companies that submitted these records had misclassified their workers. Then we used a formula that we consulted economists and statisticians to help us understand if this practice extends to the construction industry as a whole, what are we looking at in lost tax revenue? And in North Carolina, that's approaching $500 million each year. In Texas, the state is huge. Their lost tax revenue is $1.2 billion. And in Florida, where regulators have tried to combat this problem a little more aggressively, we're looking at close to $400 million a year in lost tax revenue.
In each place, you're talking about combined federal and state tax revenues that are lost in each from the workers in each state.
That's right.
So, Franco, so that's lost revenue to all of us, to the government, and then by extension, all of us taxpayers in the United States. What about the workers? Do they make out better? I mean, it sounds to me like if they're not going to, it's only a bad system if they're not paying their taxes. To what extent is it a problem because those independent contractors then don't pay their taxes? And what else might they lose as a result of being misclassified? Franco?
Well, in regards to the workers, I mean, one reason that, you know, we're knowing that they're not so much paying, I mean, studies have shown that self-employed workers underreport their income by about 56%. And we know that employees, you know, who are subject to withholding, they pay 99%. So we know this is an extensive amount of tax dollars being lost. In regards to how workers are treated, you know, they really are getting hurt. On the one hand, yes, many of them are getting paid under the table. They're not having to pay. They may or may not be paying their taxes. They may be trying to pay their taxes, but not receiving the right forms from their employers to pay them. And oftentimes they're working in very dangerous situations, as Mandy had said earlier, and they're not having the protections that they need to have in case they get injured. They're also not getting the prevailing wages that they're being required to receive, and this is a way to not pay those prevailing wages, also not pay overtime. So they're not getting paid what they should be on these projects.
Can you give us an example of a worker who would have been who would have lost out badly because they were not considered an employee?
Yes. I mean, I spoke with some workers in California, Three Brothers, and they were identified, classified as independent contractors. The contracts that they were supposed to, were doing were on military projects. They were identified as independent contractors, and they were giving a pay of $15, $17, $20 an hour. But the employer was required to be paying them for the type of work they were doing, sometimes $35, $40, $45 an hour for the type of labor that they were doing, you know, very specific electrical work and plumbing work. In addition, they also were not paid for overtime work. They often worked 50, 60 hours in a week. But yet they were only paid for the 40 hours and on that contract basis. So they were – the employer was really able to skirt a lot of the pay that he would have been required to do if he has been treating them correctly as employees.
Mandy, a lot of this has to do with the sort of post-2008 environment where people were desperate for work and then there was some money, money to sort of help rebuild the economy all at the same time.
That's right. Stimulus money flowed into communities across the country, and that was great news for our infrastructure. Roads were repaired, bridges were built, low-income housing was renovated, and workers went back to work. But what these payroll records illuminate for us is that they were put back to work in this very system that the government says it's been trying to combat for years. You know, Franco and I traveled the state, and we knocked on doors trying to find these workers, and we would knock on doors, and we would not find these workers, and it would just be these endless days of trying to find people that we knew must exist somewhere, but they weren't at that address anymore. And finally, at the end of one really long day in Charlotte, we looked at each other, and we realized that what we weren't seeing was as much a part of the problem as what we could see. And it was that this workforce is this migratory labor force that is here one minute and gone the next. And because they're not in front of our faces, because they're not coming down to the General Assembly on War on Mondays, we're sort of able as a society and as a community to not face their circumstances.
Franco, the immigrant population certainly important, as Mandy suggests, because this points to a vulnerable population, unable to speak for themselves. And the fact that organized labor, there is so little of it here in North Carolina and in the South, again, very little leverage against these companies to stop this practice or even bring it to light. How big a part does that play in all of this, Franco?
It's a really huge issue. I mean, as you know, in North Carolina, with the flood of immigrants across the country, many were here illegally. Misclassification is actually a big way that employers are able to keep that undocumented labor. I mean, what they learned is the trick is you can avoid sanctions against hiring undocumented labor simply by not calling those workers employees. And it really dates back to the 1986 amnesty law that President Reagan signed back then. There was essentially added sanctions that prevented employers from, quote unquote, knowingly hiring undocumented labor. So what the employers did is they just turned their employees into contractors, into their own businesses, and kind of added a little bit of a middleman to do the hiring. So they were to keep the workers, but they weren't, quote unquote, employees.
It's interesting because often the argument against allowing workers to organize is there are all these federal and state protections, all of these rules to protect workers. They don't need an organization. And yet we find in this case, both the federal and the state governments refused to actually enforce the laws that were on the books. And then there was no alternative.
It's so true because the rules on the books are only as powerful as the people that enforce them. And in this situation, we're talking about tax dollars. It's a time when state and federal governments are really struggling to find additional revenue. And what we're finding is that if they would just if they would just look at some of these ways, if they just enforce the rules on their books, they could recover billions of dollars.
Mandy, anything being done at the state? Or you're actually, the series goes online today, and then will be in the paper this weekend. But still, you've talked to a lot of people along the way. Is anything being done to fix this?
You know, in North Carolina, there was a little bit of conversation and activity that came after our series in 2012, but then there has been a lot of inaction. And so there's so much that could be done, but there hasn't really been an agency that's taken the lead on this. And that's why in North Carolina, we sort of have this perfect storm of circumstances that have enabled this problem to persist. And it's upended the construction industry. We have regulators that haven't been particularly aggressive about this. We have an immigrant population that's willing to suffer these circumstances. And we have low wages and an absence of unions. And so North Carolina really showed up as being a place where this problem persisted to the greatest extent.
Franco, is there any? I mean, it sounds like every organization or every department had plausible deniability, which is to say there's no real price to pay even when your series comes out. What would it take to bring about change? I guess it's legislative then.
You know, legislative would certainly be a major way, and there are some efforts kicking around in D.C. It's really hard to get anything passed these days, as you know. But also, and what we're finding in this situation is, you know, the federal government has these payroll records, these same payroll records that we requested, and we were able to identify all these red flags. The federal government has those, too. And there are steps that they could do to ensure that this doesn't have to do coordinating between agencies, making sure that federal agencies are not, you know, accepting these payroll records from companies listing 20, 30 independent contractors. If they're really independent, they should be filing their own payroll records.
Thank you both for bringing this to light. Franco Ardonez, labor and immigration reporter with McClatchy Newspapers. Thank you, Franco.
Thank you so much.
Mandy Locke, investigative reporter with the News and Observer. You can see more of her reporting in the series Contract to Cheat at newsandobserver.com. Goes online today. Check your local newspapers this weekend. Mandy, thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Frank.
Thank you for listening to The State of Things, produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley, the technical director, El Wadarski sitting in today. Brent Wolf is our news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.